Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Hi, everybody. My name's Bill, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Bill.
And boy, you guys did a real good job. It's real, real tough to do alcoholism, ego, and self because there's no recovery in there. And to stay into that and not want to come out of it is real difficult. Now we're in step one, and this is the beginning of the goodie bag, man. This is where all the stuff starts happening. Up there it says, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. And one of the things Bob helped me with was to change the words to, I admitted I was powerless over alcohol. And that my life has become unmanageable. And he also said, you don't have to change that if you don't want to. But it seemed to work for my life. You know, that's the way I had to do it. You know, I had to take a look at what my part in alcohol, ego, and self, and in the first step, what's my part? Who, you know, what do I do? Thanks. You know, a lot of us drove a long ways here today, and we come all the way up to this retreat, and I can remember doing this at the beginning for you newcomers. You know, I drive all the way up here, and we'd have a speaker, and then I'd hear this. And then we'd have another speaker, and I'd hear this. But I never heard anything in between. And I didn't understand that, you know. I didn't understand what we're up against, you know. This alcoholism is, we're bodily and mentally different. A normal person doesn't go to, how many miles is it up here? A long ways. Drive all this ways to hear something. You know, they come to a seminar or something, and the speaker gets up here, and 95% of the people hear what's going on. And we have to build a new character with God that can hear what's going on. We can't just come here, man. You know, when they say, sit down, shut up, and listen, I think that's terrible to tell a newcomer. Now, I think it should go something like this. Sit down, you know, be quiet, try your hardest to hear something. You're probably not going to hear a damn thing, but don't worry about it. It's going to get better. Man. Now, how many of you heard everything that was said tonight? Come on, think about it. You know, you got to go to your mind for your information. I can't go there for you. You know, Bob used to say he had to go to his mind for information. He's here that he was up here for his life because his life depended on hearing this stuff that we're talking about. This is prime time. And if you don't know what prime time is, this is it. This is what it's all about. This is a little bit better than what's going on. We're up here and we're going to have at the bottom of page one in step one, it says, talks about an immense experience. And what that means is, see, when I got here, by the way, when I got here, I could not read. And I didn't know anything about that stuff. I was busy when you guys were in school. Man, I was out by the handball courts trying to get your money. I was thirsty. And that's what I did. So when I got here, man, my biggest fear was that somebody was going to ask me to read in this book. And, you know, read chapter 5. And man, I thank God for sponsorship. And let me tell you, that's an important part of step one, is to have somebody to talk about. And you're going to see prime people tonight. And most of the people that are here and that aren't up here speaking are all prime timers, and they got a lot to give. And if you're new, latch onto one of them because they can save your life. And this stuff that we're going to hear tonight needs to be talked about. Man, I don't want to see people dying because they're not getting this information, man, and it's happening all over the place. You know, people die if they don't get the right information. It's your job as sponsors and you sponsees to question them until they get happy. You know, just ask them, talk to them. This is important stuff. You know, at the bottom of that page when it talks about an immense experience, man, talk about an immense experience. This Bob used to come here and do this all by himself. Because you know why? Because he told us. I get choked up every time I think about that guy, even today. He told me, Bill, I'm going to take the bumps out of the road for you. And I argued about it. It's the truth, man. Can you imagine this? I got a letter in the mail with a CD on it and said, you probably need to hear this. And it was a Bob tape from the Monday Night's Men's Stag. And I put it in my tape player and I listened to it over and over again because I was hearing things. And I'd been around Alcoholics Anonymous for 10 years. I was even sponsoring people. Whoa. You know, I listened to this thing, and I listened to it, and I listened to it, and I read on the back, and it had a phone number, and I called up, and I found out where it was, and I sat right down here in the front row where Michael's sitting. Yes, I was told the front row seats were the expensive seats. I still didn't hear nothing. Expensive seat, didn't matter, whatever, didn't matter. I sat there, and he got up and started speaking, and I said, who does he think he is? And that's the way I got introduced to Primetime. I'm going to tell you what, if you got that stuff going on right now, I understand. I understand. If I heard somebody like me up talking, I would want to throw up. And it's just a truth we're talking about. Because one of the things he did was he said the same thing over and over and over again. Alcoholism, ego, and self, steps 1, 2, and 3. And there's not an old timer in this room that hasn't gone up to him and asked him, how come you keep talking about the same thing? You know? How come you keep talking about the same thing? And he told us why. The reason he talked about the same thing all the time is because the words never change. He was talking about the 12 steps in a logical order form from 1 to 12 to produce not only a good life, but to produce a great life. And it all starts with this step 1. So he threw me this life preserver. Talks about that in step 1 too. Throws me a life preserver. I'm out in the middle of the ocean, man. I'm swimming around. The sharks are all over the place. And he throws me the life preserver and I gotta think about it. I gotta think about it, man. I can't grab onto this thing. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. And then they don't tell us to listen. Just, hey, you guys, listen up. It's everything. I love this program for alcoholics. We are bodily and mentally different. You gotta get that. This thing is not good. It says, listen as the dying would listen. Now, what that means is you're laying down, you're dying, and if you listen to me, you don't got to die. Okay, I might get in on that. Isn't that the truth? Listen as the dying would listen. So, I sat in the front row, and I said, I'm going to listen as the dying would listen. Because most of the time, all I ever heard was this. I go to a speaker meeting. Man, I'll tell you what I did. I drove all the way to Newport Beach to listen to Dr. Paul, who's in the big book, and he wrote Dr. Addict Alcohol. I think they changed the name now, but I'll stick to what I got. Anyway, and I got his, he was signing books. I got his book. To Bill, Dr. Paul, and everything. We all sat there. We all went to the meeting and everything. I didn't hear a word the man had to say. But I'm an alcoholic. So I get back to, hey, how was, oh man, you should have been there. Got his book, got everything. Man, I tell you what, I put on faces and I tell you how good he was. But I'm not going to tell you, never heard a word he said. Because I'm an alcoholic, man, and I got to look good no matter what. And that looking good is what's going to kill me. And thank God for prime time, you're going to tell me that's not the way it works. The way it works is I have to have some type of some kind of a spiritual character change to live in this world happily, usefully whole. And there's only one way to get there. And I cannot get from step one where I love this part. Where I can't get from step one where I got a warped mind and I got to believe it to step two where Randy's mentally ill. He's going to be mentally ill tomorrow, man, step two. And step one, it gets worse, man. These first seven steps are going to point out who I am and why I'm the way I'm. I don't have a clue when I get here. We're talking just about step one now. Now, I have gone through all these 12 steps, and I've had a spiritual awakening, and I have a great life. But we're talking about step one now, man. And I'm telling you, man, I'm in step one, and it's crazy. Everybody's talking, man, and all these committees are talking, and everything's going on. And I'm sitting in the front row, and I'm trying to get this thing. And Bob says, you just roll up your sleeves and don't worry about a thing, man. You'll be able to hear. And I roll up my sleeves, and 3 minutes later, my mind is gone, and I'm out of here. So, of course, you know what I do. I pick up the phone, and who do I call after the meeting? Well, by now, he never got home until it was about 10:30 at night, 11 o'clock, sometimes 11:30. Ring, ring, ring. Bill, it's Bill. What's going on, Bill? It's impossible. You cannot do that. I sat there. I rolled up my sleeves. I said, God, would you help me listen? I was ready, and 3 or 4 minutes later, I was out of the room. And here's his response. Great! I says, what do you mean, great? It doesn't work. He said it worked for 3 or 4 minutes. You never had that before. He says, this is called character building. You gotta give, in step one, 100% of what you got. Not 100%. I'd have failed the test, man. I never went to school. I'd have failed all these tests. I was so scared that they were going to make me read this thing and bring it. Finally, thank God for a sponsor. They set me up. You know, they had one girl on one side and one on the other. And when I said, oh, listen, I don't have my glasses, they had glasses. When I said, I can't come up to the podium, they said, don't worry about it. You can read it right there. You know, he did all that stuff to me. What a lovely man. You know, I was at his funeral. There was about 300 people there. Can you imagine that? That's the kind of guys we're... That's what happens here. We build new characters and we have lives beyond our wildest dreams. And it all starts right here in step one. But I got to believe to my innermost self that I got a warped mind. And that only this act of providence that they talk about is going to help me. That's the only thing that's going to help me. But I got to believe it, and I got to sit down with a sponsor that'll tell me that over and over again because I can't hear it. So I built on that 3 minutes, you know, and I built on it, and I built on it, and I built on it, and I built a new character with God. See, when I say, God, would you help me listen? What that does, and we talked about alcoholism, ego, and self, that gets the ego out of the way so we can hear something. Because otherwise, if I'm listening, the only time I'm listening is if you're telling jokes and everybody's laughing, man, and I'm in. You know, and then I'm going to take that joke to some other meeting and I'm going to look good. And you guys know what I'm talking about. If you've been around here a while, that's how we start this thing. It's all about getting rid of that. You don't have to do that anymore. Just be the man that God wants you to be. And the only way you can do this is to have an act of providence. And the act of providence is going through these steps. And you got to get that ego. Man, that thing will just kill you to death. So I ask God to help me listen little by slowly, this is a little by slowly program. But the men in prime time, man, they never let me down. They spent hours and hours and hours with this guy's mind. You know, by the way, the big book and the 12 and 12 are both on tape for you guys that have a problem reading. You know, some of you guys might have got an early start like I did, you know, and don't have the, and you know what God put in my life? You know who my first sponsor was? A school teacher. Who'd have guessed? You think God doesn't know what he's doing? Straightened me right out, sat down with me, man, and showed me what those words were and showed me. I had to learn what the words were, how to even read them before I could get started. So you're going to hear a lot of stuff this weekend. You know, I mean, you're going to hear an awful lot of stuff. And you know what? I'm really glad with the guy that's taping this. Thank you, God. Because I'll tell you what it did for me. See, this is an experience being here. And it's experiential now for you guys that are here. You're hearing this. You're hearing the laughters and the jokes and the thises and thats and what somebody did. And I'm going to share. I always have one for you before I go. And I got a good one this time. But I always got one, man. And it's not going to be the 12-item lion, guys. It's going to be a new one. So... But you're going to hear stuff, you know, that's so wonderful, man. And what happens is the sponsorships and all the people around here want one thing. They want you to have a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps so that you can help somebody else. And that's what this is all about. So I like 31 flavor ice cream. And My drug of choice was rum and coke. So when I got sober, I had a little tiny bit of a sweet tooth. Well, there was a 31 flavors down the street. Now I'm sober. You got to get the whole picture now, because I'm saying this because you got to get the whole picture. I'm sober 30 years. Okay. So 30 years ago, I was going to this 31 flavor ice cream store. Well, all the ice cream, a lot of it comes pre-packed. You know, it's all pre-packed and it's all nice, you know, and full. But the coffee ice cream that I like is hand-packed. So I gotta pay attention because, you know, she's gonna be putting that in there, and some of them just go plop, plop and hand it to you. And some of them pound it down and all this stuff. And some of them jump on it. And then they always go by and they weigh it like this. Woo! And then they hand it to you. Well, for 30 years, I've known that there's not enough ice cream in there. I've absolutely known that, guys. Until this... About 3 days ago, I'm talking to the sheet. I got two of the hand packs two of the regular ones, and she's down there doing the hand pack. Well, the lady over here that owns the place started talking to me. I didn't see her do it. Uh-oh. I didn't see her pack that ice cream. So it's in there, and I got three ice creams in a bag, and I pay for it. Oh, and I asked her, I said, "You sure you got enough in there?" Well, of course, I weighed it, didn't I? She did it awfully fast, though. Now, this has been going on for 30 years, and I always think about it, but I never did anything about it. Now I gotta tell you how us alcoholics are. So I gotta go over to the store to get some other stuff, a couple of things for the house that's on my wife's little list. And I decide to take the three bags of ice cream and put them in my cart. Cause I'm gonna weigh it! Oh man, I'm finally, after 30 years, I'm gonna weigh this ice cream. So of course I took the regular ones because they say 1.5s on them, and I put on, sure enough, 1.5. So hey, I gotta have 1.5. I know it's not gonna be 1.5. I already know it. Preconceived. Alcoholism, ego, and self. Everybody's at the table. And I put that thing on there, man, and it's 1.9. 30 years I've been worried about that sucker, and it's been heavier. How do we do that, guys? So you don't have to weigh it no more, guys. I got it all done for you. Thanks for letting me share with you guys. Because that's the old-fashioned way.
I was told the only step we do perfectly is step one. Is this true?
Yeah, this is the part about not drinking, and that's the most important part, and that's why we're here. You know, we don't drink no matter what. That's the deal. And you guys that are sponsoring brand new guys, drive it home. They got to hear this stuff. They got to hear this information. And it's your job to let them know that no matter what, for the rest of their life, they're not going to drink one day at a time. And if you don't get that through to them, and if they can't get that, don't go any further until they're understanding that and they're getting that. And spend a lot of time with that part of it, because it is the most important thing that you got to talk to them about. Thanks.
Can an atheist that denies God and any all higher power still recover?
Yeah. You know, you have a chapter, We Agnostics, if you're an atheist, you know, there's all the loopholes. This is what you got a sponsor for. All the loopholes are plugged. You know, I couldn't get this program. I sat there and I knew I could never have the life that I have today, because my mind told me that. See, that's just a cop out, man. The bottom line is, we don't drink no matter what. And you find your own power. I don't care what it is, man, as long as it makes sense to you. I don't care what you use. Mostly, you make a character change. I think the best character change is do unto others as you want them to do to you. If that works for you, that's good enough, man. You know, I don't care about your beliefs or churches or temples or Buddha. It makes no difference to me. I just don't want you to drink. And if you think that that's your way out, it's just another cop out, man. And that's why your sponsor will take you through those steps with his God. Use his, man. Don't even worry about yours, man. If you don't have one, don't use one. You know, use mine. Use somebody else's. It doesn't make any difference. Don't use any. Just be a good guy. How about we haven't done that our whole life? You know, we hurt every, you know, when they said, you know, when I got here, they said, you know, on my list, my sponsor told me, don't worry about it. It's really simple. Just put down everybody that you ever knew. You hurt every one of them. And you know what? When you look at you, I admitted I was powerless. When you look at the I, you will notice that there's nobody you missed. And some of them you really did a good job on. Man, at least that's the way it is for me.
Can you talk about compliance versus surrender?
Sure. Yeah, I like that one. It's one of my favorites. You know, I think when we first get here, we live in compliance. You know, I really do. I think that, at least for me, what happened to me was I came in here and, I was just like a puppet. I just did everything that you told me to do. But I tell you the truth, if you knew what was going in my mind, it wasn't anything to do with any of this stuff. I just did it because, man, I couldn't live out there in the world of drinking and drugging anymore. And, you know, where I was hanging out, they weren't talking about Alcoholics Anonymous, I guarantee you. You know, and when I finally found a way out and somebody carried this message to me, and we got a lot of work to do. There's a lot of people suffering, man. horribly. And I hope that, you know, I hope we do more. I think we got to do more. And the compliance is just saying, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. And if you got to comply at the beginning, do it. You know, until you can tell the truth. Man, my sponsor told me something, and this might be something you guys can use sponsoring people. He said to me, he says, Bill, he said, wouldn't it be nice if you just had one person in your whole life that you didn't lie to? And that person's going to be me. And if you do lie to me, just tell me about it when you can. Tell me about it when you can. Because we've lied our whole life, man. We had to lie to survive. So we're going to be doing a lot of compliance, man. But maybe if you could just find a sponsor and tell him the truth. Tell him how you feel. Tell him all those deep, dark secrets. He's already done them all. Don't worry about it. You're going to do him more good than he's ever going to do for you. He's going to be so happy because you'll force him back through the steps again and again and again and again. And it's wonderful. It's a wonderful experience. And that's all starts in step one. That's the beginning of recovery. This is a program of recovery, not failure. It's not failure here, guys. There's no failing here. There's only, you know, will nots. You guys that are will nots, we still got, give us some time with you. You know, don't leave. Don't leave no matter what. No matter what your mind tells you. I just didn't leave. And I'm going to tell you what. I lived the same life sober as I did drunk for 10 years and still made it here. And I'll tell you what, I've had the best years. There's no way to replace the kind of life you guys have given me. You know? And we're all, you know, and the truth is I look forward to seeing Bob again, seeing Ted again, seeing Ken again, and all my buddies. You know, I look forward to that stuff. Are you kidding, man? You know, that's, as you get a lot of years in this program and you start talking to some of the old timers, man, that next life is talked about. And it's a wonderful life, and there's only one way there, man. It's the same way. I already know what's going to happen. When I die, man, there it's going to be. There's Bob going to be. Come on, I'll show you the way. I'll take the bumps out of the road for you, Bill. And there, that'll be the way it'll be. And Ken will be saying, come on, Bill, I want you to read all this. He used to bring me in my office stacks, you know, of literature, man, for me to read. So I couldn't read anymore. You know, and God bless Ted, you know. There's no words to describe what he did for me. Just to know that every time I picked up the phone, what he was going to say was wonderful. You talk to God lately. Oh, my God. I buy her some flowers. Okay, one more.
What is complete defeat?
Well, I'm gonna leave that for tomorrow night. I mean, for tomorrow morning. Because there's nobody that I've ever heard better in the world that can talk about complete defeat than Randy. And he's gonna be talking about step two tomorrow. And, he'll get in some good detail in that. And he will give you a good answer for that. You know, he'll give you a great answer for that. And that is in step two. So. Thanks for letting me share with you guys tonight.
I'm Randy, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm very grateful to be here. Wow, what a gift. I don't know. I can't believe how good it could get. So I'm going to talk about step two, hopefully. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And I read that step like Bill read the first step in the eye, that I'm coming to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I'm coming to believe right now more. And, you know, these steps are a way of life. What was shown to me is it's a way of life. The first time I went through the steps, it was so ridiculous. But it was fantastic because I didn't drink. But in looking back, it was, and the man who took me through them had a great program and he spoke from the books, but the way I went through them was ridiculous. Do you admit you're powerless over alcohol? Yes. I can never drink. Every time I drink, something bad happens. And I never know when and why or how, but, and then I usually don't remember what. But it was bad, usually. Even if I had fun, I didn't remember the fun. They had to tell me about it. So I can never drink alcohol again. I got that part. And then my life has become unmanageable. When I first went through the steps, it was unmanageable because I drank. It was unmanageable because I wrecked cars and wrecked relationships and couldn't keep jobs because I drank. And then we went to step two and he said, are you willing to believe that there's a power greater than yourself? Are you just willing to believe that? And I said, yes, I am willing to believe that. I think the way the universe works is too mathematically correct for it to be random. So I believe that there's a power that did that. And then we got on our knees and we did a prayer. And in between, we read a lot of stuff out of the books, and we talked about a lot of stuff. But, you know, I was new. It's so painful just to get through the day, right? And so I did it as a agreeing. I did these steps. Basically, if I agreed with the step, it was time to move on to the next one. I agreed that I was willing to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I did not understand him, but I was hoping that with time I was going to come to understand him and then everything was going to be wonderful. And I treated my alcohol. I did not drink no matter what, one day at a time. I went to a meeting every day and I worked steps and I did what they said to do in AA because I could never drink again. And what happened to me was I thought that I was treating the disease because I wasn't drinking, because I thought the disease was alcohol. And so long as I wasn't drinking alcohol, I was doing what was necessary in AA to treat the disease. And I didn't drink, and I would go to meetings, and they would say, first of all, it got really good. My life got really good first because I wasn't drinking, and I had paychecks, and I had jobs, and I had kept, you know, I was getting along better with girlfriends and parents and everybody. And I didn't hate my life as much as I did the day, you know, when I came in, because I was not drinking and there was some hope. And then time passed and I'd done all 12 steps and about a year and a half passed and I started finding fault again with my girlfriend, with my car, with my house, with my job. But I didn't even know what it was. I didn't see it as finding fault. I just thought I was the world's most unlucky person. That nothing good ever happened to me. And it didn't happen when I was drinking and it didn't happen when I was sober. But if I stayed sober long enough, my luck was going to change. So I was going to hang in there no matter what. And one day it was going to get better. I knew it was because it got better for you guys. And I trudged along and at 4.5 years of sobriety, I would come home and I would just want to die. I mean, I just was the world's biggest loser. I was never going to have a job that I liked, making the amount of money that I needed, to have the girl that I wanted, to live in the house that I needed, and to be okay. I was the world's biggest loser. Nothing ever worked out for me. And you know, they would say, just don't drink today and you're a winner. And I don't know. It wasn't working for me. I wasn't feeling like a winner. And then I met my sponsor, Ted, one of these gentlemen. Oh, unbelievable. Like Bill said, he was always there. I spent so much time with him. I look at new guys and like they get my phone number and they call me once a month whether they need to or not. My sponsor went to a noon meeting every day. I knew where he was. I went there every day that I could go there. And I would eat lunch in the noon meeting, get a meeting, and then he would spend a half an hour to an hour with me every day, every single day. My first sponsor said to me in a meeting, we were talking, and I was helping him because he was an older guy and lonely and he needed someone to talk to. That's what my mind told me. I was being a service in AA to this old lonely guy. And he looked across the table at me and he looked me dead in the eye and he said to me, Randy, if you knew how sick you were, your head would explode. And I like to say this. Now that I have some time, I believe it's just as true today as it was the day he told me it. If I knew how sick I was, you know, because I think I'm doing so good. And my life is so good. It's so unbelievably good, especially up here right now. But it's just, I'm just scratching the surface. There's so, it's an infinite power that I'm coming to believe in more in this moment right now, always right now. And so it just keeps getting bigger. So there's something wrong with me, and it was described, alcoholism, ego, and self. I got an I used to say I have an unsatisfied mind. And I shared that one night, and I thought, wait a minute, that means that it could be satisfied. My mind is not satisfiable. I have an unsatisfiable mind. And I have tried repeatedly over and over and over to come up with the next right thing that will satisfy me. And I have an unsound mind. I have a mind that keeps it tells me that if you just run some more scenarios, you will eventually get to the right answer and be restored to sanity. Because when I get the right answer, then I'll be sane. Then I can stop running the scenarios. The crazy man. You know, this is the universal sign for crazy. How often do people get up to the podium in AA and say, oh yeah, the thoughts, they just keep going around and around. I'm going, yeah, uh-huh. Take a look at that. There might be something to that. There's something wrong with me. And what's wrong with me is that I have the delusion. These are words from a book. And if they're not words for your life yet, take a look at it until you can agree or disagree with the words, because it's just words in a book. But the words in the book are that I have the delusion that I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if I only manage well. It's a delusion. It's a lie that I tell myself. And I believe it so strongly. And I keep trying with my mind to get this thing. Even AA. I have the delusion that if I come to this retreat and I sit and I listen and I take notes, I'm going to hear something. And then I'm going to be able to take that thing that I heard, that I learned in AA, and I'm going to be able to do it when I need it for the problems that are going to arise in the future. Sounds great. Never happened to me. I heard the most amazing things from this podium, from Bob Anderson, from Ted. I heard the most amazing things about how to be with people, but people just piss me off. When they say the thing that I don't like, I get mad. I don't remember what I heard from the podium. It just hurts me. And when I'm hurt, I go to my mind and I start figuring out how to retaliate and how to hurt them back and how to get mine and how to protect me. And I don't go to God. I go to, oh yeah, I'll show you. And all they said was, how you doing? My mind said, they're saying, you're not doing so good, are you? At the end of the first step, it says in the 12 and 12, it says that I stand ready to do anything which will lift my merciless obsession from me. Now, there are a lot of guys here. There's probably some newer guys here in the first 90 days or whatever in your sobriety. And your merciless obsession is most doubtedly probably alcohol. You're mercilessly obsessed to not drink again today, no matter what. And that is, you know, and nothing but an act of providence can remove that from you. So you're going to have to turn to a power. Probably I did. That's what I had to do. I had to turn to a power to have that merciless obsession for alcohol and drugs removed. And it was, eventually. But today I don't mercilessly obsess about alcohol. I mercilessly obsess about how to please myself. I mercilessly obsess about how much weight I need to lose so that I can shut up about my weight. I mercilessly obsess about how much money I need in the bank to make it through retirement comfortably, so that I can then, if I get that amount of money, then maybe my mind will shut up about money. And I mercilessly obsess about having the perfect wife so that my mind could shut up about women. My merciless obsession is to please self. Whatever self says is the thing that I need for today is the thing. And then I'm going to use my mind, which is warped, which was described earlier. I'm going to use my warped mind to try to restore myself to sanity. And I'm going into the warper. Whoa, it's going to be scary. And what's crazy is even a good thought, it's a good thought. It starts with a good thought. Oh, I need to make more money so my daughter can go to a good college. That's a good thought. But then it goes into the warper and it comes out as you never make good money. You hate everybody at work. You need a new job. You need to divorce your wife because she doesn't have enough money and she's not right. And all that stuff is going to be too much trouble, so you should just kill yourself. And that thought goes from, I need to make more money so my daughter can go to college, to I need to kill myself faster than I can speak it in words. It's over. It's time to kill myself. Nothing, no time passes. The speed of light. My mind is so warped and so fast. It's like the black hole. It just eats it. Boom. Whoa. I get to come to believe. So the second step is, okay, if I stand ready to do anything that'll lift my merciless obsession, I have to do the worst thing that ever happened to me. Because every natural instinct, this is words from a book, every natural instinct in me cries out against the idea of personal powerlessness. This is not like a surface wound. Every natural instinct, everything inside of me, cries out against the idea of personal powerlessness, of admitting complete defeat, of not being the power for my life. See, I want to figure this stuff out. I want to come here and learn some stuff. I want to learn some tricks, and I want to go practice those tricks so I can get the stuff that I need. Heaps. I need heaps of money. It says that in the book. I need heaps of money. I don't just need money. I don't need little piles. I need heaps of it. So now it says that I'm going to come to believe that a power greater than myself. It doesn't say in a power. See, that scared me for years. I thought I was going to have to come to believe in a power. And I was waiting for somebody to take me into the back room of AA and tell me which power it was that I was going to have to believe in. Is it going to be Jesus or Buddha or Muhammad or whatever the heck it's going to be? And that scared me because I have a lot of prejudices against the word God and religions. I am filled with prejudices. You say God, and I see a man on a throne throwing thunderbolts, and he's going to kill me because I'm always doing stuff that's not right. I'm not right. And if we got what we deserved in this program, if you got what you deserved, this room would be empty. I wouldn't be here either. So we're lucky we don't get what we deserved. So I'm coming to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. That's it. And so there's like three parts, right? That I'm coming to believe, what is that? And how do you do that? And that there's a power greater than myself. That just means that there's me and there's a power greater than me. And you don't even have to know what it is. And to come to believe, you don't have to know what it is. You don't have to name it. You don't have to do anything. You call it power. You just have to start right now. See, this program is a way of life. It's not a learned thing. I can't learn this. I can't memorize what's going on here. I can't keep listening to the tapes and figure this thing out. It's right now. Power, could you be with me? Could I come to believe more right now in this moment that you could restore me to sanity? Because I know I can't. I will try. I will try again. I'm sure I will try again. Probably many times, maybe today. But there's a power. And if I start right now, in this moment, as a way of life of coming to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, by sharing my life with that power, how else are you going to come to believe? If you want to come to believe that Cheerios taste good, you got to put one in your mouth and chew on it and swallow it. And then you can make a decision. Was it a good Cheerio or not? Do you want more of it? It's the same thing with the power. I gotta start sharing my life with it. Power, could you help me? Could you help me to listen, like Bill said last night? Could you help me to hear what's being said right now? See, you don't have to memorize what's being said right now. You can't. I can't. I just have to be in the room and having an experience of coming to believe right now that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. In the sanity, everything that I need to know is being presented at the exact moment that I need to know it. in the being restored to sanity. It's there. You see, the reason you can't learn this isn't because you're stupid or because you have alcoholism. It's because you already know it. The problem I have is that self is so loud and self is so trying to wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world by managing well. It crowds out that intuitive understanding that I already have. It's already inside me. This power is deep down within me. It already knows all this. So all I have to do is show up and say, God, could you get me out of the way so that I could do your will, which has already been programmed in me, just like God's will has been programmed in the whales. When it's winter time, the whales don't get together in Alaska and decide if they're going to go to Hawaii for the winter. They don't plan on, you know, they don't try to figure out if there's going to be enough krill in Alaska that maybe they don't have to take the long swim. They just do what they're intuitively guided to do, and they don't worry about what's going to be in Maui. They just go there. They don't even have a GPS. I don't know how they get there. How do they get there? If you left Alaska, even with a GPS, there's a good chance you're going to miss Hawaii. These guys, they just go. They do what they're intuitively guided to do, and they show up where they're supposed to be when they're supposed to be there. Everything they need is delivered when they get there. And that's the way God's world works. That's the way it was shown to me by my sponsor. Everywhere man isn't, the world works perfectly. It's only when I get in there with my will that I screw up the flow and I decide, no, this winter I'm not swimming. I'm staying here and I'll be the dead whale on the beach. Coming to believe is right now. You never are there. It doesn't say that I came to believe for a while and then I was restored to sanity forever. I'm coming to believe. I mean, maybe it does say I came to believe. But when did you came to do that? The only moment I could be restored to sanity for my life is right now, right here. And it's the only moment that I need to be restored to sanity. Because I don't need it for later. I don't know what's going to happen later. I need it right now. This is a right now program. My sponsor used to say, the relationship with the power is at the intersection of right here and right now. And that's what's going on here. And if I can hook up with that power, I don't need to remember anything. Because everything I need is being supplied in the moment that I need it. Right there, like magic. Like magic. Except for that I'm sane and I'm treating the God and the people around me are having a better experience. Because I'm coming to believe. And then ultimately I have a better experience. And I start to go from a guy who hated his life. I hated my life. I hated everybody and everything in my life. I thought I was the world's most unlucky person. Today, I love my life. I can't believe how good it is. And it keeps getting better. Yeah, there's bumps in the road. Yeah, I get hung up. My business is imploding right now. I'm having the best time. I'm sorry. Here it goes. You know why? Because that one's going to implode now. And maybe if I can just let it go and ask the power, what do you have me do now? Maybe I could find the right place doing the right thing at the right time with the right people making the right amount of money and I can shut up about my work. So I think that's all I got. Bob always said that all recovering alcoholics, no matter how long they are sober, are working step two. What did he mean by that? Well, I am not Bob, and I can't presume to be in Bob's head, but I'll tell you what it means for me. It's that kind of what I said already. If I am not coming to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, then I am trusting and relying that I could restore me to sanity, and I am dying of alcoholism right now. And it starts, you see, it's a program, it's step one. I have to have step one. We talk a lot about talking to God and prayer, and all those things are great, But if I don't come to that power with a spirit of complete defeat, of I cannot do this on my own power, whatever this is, be a husband, be a father, be a driver, a safe driver on the freeway, be a worker among, I cannot do any of those things on my own power and be at peace. If I don't have that as a basis, as a spirit, as a way of life, as a principle in my life, if I don't have that, there's no way I can come to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I am going to be that power, and I'm going to keep trying to restore myself to sanity until I get to the point where I say, oh yeah, see, there I am again. I'm up to my old tricks. I'm restoring me to sanity. Can I talk about an open mind? Arguing in the debating society. You know, there's so much stuff, great stuff in this program. I'm so glad that you guys that are here. Step two is about having an open mind. I used to think an open mind was, you know, me and two women is a good way to have sex. I thought that was open-minded. If gay people want to get married, they can get married. I'm open-minded. That is not what open-minded is for me today. Today, open mind is a mind free of self. It's open. It's open to some new guidance. It's open. See, my mind, everything I know, it says in how it works. I have to let go of my old ideas absolutely. The results are nil until I let go of my old ideas absolutely. Every single thing I know up until this moment right now is an old idea. Everything I've learned in AA is an old idea. And self will take all those old ideas and try to figure out how to manage my life again using self. Everything up to this moment is an old idea. The debating society. So it was talked about in ABCs and one. It's the self-talking. The debating society. Here's how alcoholism works for me. No matter what I get, I lose. If I am in alcoholism, no matter what I get, I lose. I used to bid jobs for a business, and I was in a creative field, so I could make up any number I wanted to. And so it was all based on how much money you had and how much I could get from you for that job. And so it was very challenging for me to write the bid to begin with because I had to come up with a number. And I had to debate, you know, if I do this much, then they'll say this. If I do that much, then they'll say that. And I can add some here and take some there and blah, 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 until I go crazy. And finally, 3 days later, it was due 2 days ago. 3 days later, I put a number on and I send it off and I hope they do it. And then no matter what they say, I lose. Because if they take the job, my mind tells me, oh, you are such a loser. Anybody could do that job for that amount of money. Anyone would take that job. You're a loser. You should have asked for more money. And then if I don't get the job, it says, oh, look at you. You're such a loser. Nobody's going to take a job for that much money. Why would you ask for that much money? You are the world's biggest loser. So either way, I lose. And it's the same thing in every area of my life with alcoholism. I cannot stand the woman I'm with. I am so sick of her. I found fault with her ankles, her knees, her shoulders, her brain, her money, her everything. And I found this 6 months ago. And I'm finally at that point where today I'm going to tell her she's got to get out. And I finally, after 6 months of incredible pain, staying with the wrong woman, I tell her, you have to go. I can't be with you anymore. And the minute she's gone, my mind says, why'd you do that? She's the best girl you're ever going to have. And there was nothing I could do about it. And now I'm in so much pain and I'm calling. Guys, call me. So all the time I get calls from guys, oh, we broke up and it's terrible and I'm in so much pain. I'm okay, let's see if you make it through dinner tonight. Because invariably I get a call back, oh yeah, we're having dinner tonight. After all that pain and how terrible it is that we broke up, they call me back and they're dating again, usually the same day. Is that the same as knowing? Oh, I don't. The debating society, yeah. When I'm debating, I'm arguing. Whenever I'm arguing with me. This isn't about debating with you about if you should vote for Romney or Obama. It's about the debate that goes on in my head about should I stay with this girl or not. That never ends and never lets up and never shuts up and never stops. And I'm debating with me. It has nothing to do with you. You're talking to me about something that's important to you. And in my head, I'm debating whether I should stay with this girl or not. I'm smiling and nodding and going, I haven't heard a word you said. I'm so deep in the debate about the problem that I have, I can't hear what you're saying. I'm not even interested in you. I'm only interested in figuring out which way of this debate is going to win. What does it mean to rightly relate myself to God? You know, I don't know what it means to rightly relate myself to God. I know what I do to try to rightly relate myself to God. The minute I think I know something about God and how God works, I am in big trouble. So for me, when I say rightly relate myself to the power, it's that the power is, what does it say? That one is all power. All power. May I find him now. That's a good way to rightly relate myself to that power. For me. I share my life with God. Here I am. Right here. Right now, power. Could you be with me? Could you help me to be in this room? Could you help me to love these people and not find fault with them? Could you help me to just be here right now, this moment, to feel the air, to feel my feet on the ground? What would you have me do now? Probably just be a listener, right? Could you help me listen without being an interruption to the room? And I start rightly relating myself to the power. The power is the power. I am the wrong power for my life. I'm the unsound mind. I'm being restored to the sound mind if I share my life with that power right now. Why do the administrators at the church... I'm not even going to read that. Now I know I have to read the questions for... Okay. You said... Thoughts happen at the speed of light, and my mind sped away. Yeah, isn't that great? I come here to the retreat, and I want to hear some stuff. And my mind is such a fantasizer. I have such a fantasizing mind that I'm here, and I hear something. Oh, yeah, just share. Be with the power right now. And then I think, yeah, that'll be really good. I'll be with the power right now when I'm with my wife. And then we'll get along better. And then I start fantasizing about what it's like to be with my wife. And then we're not getting along so good. And then I'm finding fault with her. And then I need a divorce. And then I'm brought back to the moment because people are clapping again or laughing or something. And I go, wow, look at that. The guy said something good that I could agree with. And my mind agreed with it, which is where the disease is. And I left the room with that mind on a good idea. And I didn't hear another word that was said at the retreat. It's happened to me where it happened for a whole day. I heard something really good and I started to fantasize about how good it could be. And I left the room and I never came back, and then it was over. The retreat was over. Everybody was hugging each other and they had such a great experience. I'm like, what? Where was I? I wasn't there. I was in fantasy land. You wanna do something really fun? Close your eyes for 1 second and imagine a world. Right now, a world where you're the king of the world. Nobody can say no to you. Nobody. Nobody can say no to you. Everything you want, you get. Are you a good king or are you a bad king? Somebody did that to me. Robbie did that in a meeting. And, you know, where my mind went, where nobody could say no to me, was a dark, scary place for everybody that was involved except for me. I'm not a good king. My mind goes to crazy places when no one can say no. But that's what I ultimately want. I want to be the power for my life. I want to have enough money and enough power and enough prestige so that nobody can say no to me. And that's the only way my alcoholic mind is ever going to be satisfied. It's unsatisfiable. I don't even know, you know, Rick said Elvis Presley, he had it all, everything. He had the money, the looks, the women, the everything. And he died fat and drugged out and unhappy. If Elvis doesn't have enough to be happy, I don't think there's enough to please me.
Okay. Is there a way to apply spiritual principles to slow it down?
Yeah, I'm not moving at the speed of light if I'm right here right now. I'm right here right now. This is it. This is where it slows down. It all slows down right now. This moment, my sponsor told me that this moment, and we were talking about it at breakfast this morning, this moment is an infinite moment. It's going on forever, this moment. Those stars that were shooting last night, they shot a long time ago. And we're just now seeing the light. The light from those lights that's shining, that fire was burning a long, long, unfathomable amount of time ago. And we're just seeing it now. This moment is infinite. It's slow. It's forever. This is it. This is as good as it gets right here, right now.
Do I deserve to have a loving, caring, judgmental, unjudgmental God?
It doesn't matter if you deserve it or not. You got it. God doesn't care. My God doesn't care what I've done, obviously, or I would be gone. My God cares what I do right now in this moment.
Ted had a prayer. I wish I'd have brought it. But in the prayer it said, I don't even know if I'm doing your will, but I believe that my desire to do your will pleases you. And I hope that that desire is the basis of everything that I do today. So I don't think that God's living in the past or living in the future. It's right now. And right now in this moment, I'm free to be the man that that power wants me to be right now. Now, there's a lot of work to do. There's 12 steps. We're building a character. This doesn't happen because I said, oh, I'm going to come to believe today, and now I believe. There's 12 steps of recovery. I've got to build this new character that lives this as a way of life. And step 4 and step 5 and step 6 and step 8 and 9. And in 8 and 9, I pay the price for the harms that I've done. I pay the price. I make the amends. I don't just say I'm sorry. I make it right. I make their lives better. And I pay the price. And now I know what the price is. Because they say you can do anything you want in this program. You can do anything you want sober, so long as you're willing to pay the price. Until you've done step 9, you don't know what the price is. It's just lip service. When you go back and you make amends to the people you've harmed, you will know what the price is of harming someone again in the future. And then you can make a decision if you're willing to pay that price or not.
Is that? I don't know what the time.
How important is it to develop your own conception of a higher power? It's a good question. I don't know how important it is. What's important is that I share my life with that power right now, whatever the conception is. I mean, it's going to be better if it's the one who has all power. And it's a loving power that wants the best for me. My conception of God is that what it says in Sermon on the Mount about the meek, that it's more about what God's will is for me, is to be happy and vital and interested. God's will for me is something happy, vital, and interesting, and better than anything I could think of for myself. And the desire to let that come about in whatever fashion God sees fit. I think it's very important that you call it whatever you want to call it. You see, it's going to be your own conception of God. So that's all that matters, is that you have your own conception of God. My conception of God is the one that restores me to sanity. When I go there, I am restored to sanity. I don't know how or why. It just happens. And I have experience of going there and being restored to sanity. So I have my conception of God. I can call that God whatever I want. God is a title.
God is the one who has all power. Like, general is the one who has all power of that particular part of the army. God is the one who has all power. That's a title. You can call it Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad, Murray, whatever you want to call it. You can call it. It doesn't even matter. And you can't have my conception of God, and I can't have yours. I have to build my own conception of God through practicing right now, this moment, practicing having a relationship with the power. And then I will have my conception. And my conception today is when I go there, I get restored to sanity. That's all I need to know about God. The more I think I know, the more trouble I'm going to get into. Can I speak more on complete defeat? You know, most people don't like it when I speak about complete defeat. It sounds terrible, but it's not terrible. It's a state of mind. For me, it's a state of mind. Look, I have just finishing a 3-year business as a partner in a business where we ran a business that was semi-successful for a while and now is coming to an end. I have a wife. I have kids. I have cars. I have car payments. I pay my insurance. I own a house. I have a whole full life. I have a full, incredible life. And I am a complete defeat at doing any part of that and being at peace with my mind because I have alcoholism. I look out at you guys and I hope you don't have what I have. I hope you don't have to admit complete defeat. It's the worst thing that ever happens to you. Admitting complete defeat, it crushes the ego. It smushes the life out of it. Everything that I thought was important is now dead in complete defeat. I hope that you don't have that. But if you do, if your mind never lets you enjoy the moment you're in, admitting complete defeat is a way of life where I know for my life that I can't do anything on my own and be at peace and have a good experience for everyone involved. But with this power, in a state of complete defeat, I then I have the willingness to reach out to a power and say, hey, God, I don't know how to be a husband. What could I do right now? Show me how to be the best husband I could be. And then an intuitive thought will come in. Wash the dishes. And my mind immediately says, no, that can't be complete. That can't be a good husband. How about if I get a maid to wash the dishes? No, wash the dishes. And then I wash a dish. And I feel better. And my wife is happier. And my life gets better. And when I do what I'm intuitively guided to do, in a spirit of complete defeat, because I'm not going to do it if I'm not in complete defeat. I'm not going to listen. I'm not going to do it. I have to have that first. And then everything is added onto that. Without a spirit of complete defeat in my life, no other aspects of recovery are possible. You know, it starts with alcohol. I cannot do this, power. I cannot do it. I need help. Thank you for letting me share.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.